I'm delighted to be joined by Scott Heffron and Denise McIntosh from Custom Powders. Custom Powder Systems provides a mixture of bespoke and standard solutions for dry material handling, process equipment, high containment and sterile processing sectors. The company is based in Springfield, Missouri, and since its formation in 2005, the company has grown from 27 employees to 65 and is now operated in 19 countries around the world. Their solution is fully integrated turnkey systems, going from front-end design right through to validation and customer handover, offering solutions in a multitude of industries, including food, chemical, pharmaceutical, battery materials, energy, and nutraceutical. Scott Heffron is the Senior Vice President of Technology, who is involved in all aspects of design and engineering, from conceptual design to handover, and is a true engineer in every sense of the word, spending his time restoring classic cars, building pinball machines, and even designing lawn irrigation systems. Denise is the CEO of Custom Powder Systems and is particularly involved in all aspects of the sales and marketing for the company. She holds a degree in economics from Oklahoma State University and an MBA in business administration from the University of Nebraska. Hello, Denise. Hello, Scott, and welcome to the Pharma Tech Talks podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about current manufacturing trends, but with a focus on high containment and sterile processing. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about Custom Powders?
Well, thank you, Kristen, for welcoming us to your podcast. We actually do a podcast here at Custom Powder Systems called The Art of Engineering. So glad to see you and have you invite us for the one of the first ones.
No problem.
Custom Powder Systems was formed, Scott and myself and three other individuals started this grand experiment in 2005. Most of them had been in the powder handling industry for a number of years. So we started in 2005, generally with mostly simple powder handling equipment. So bins, blenders, lifts. And we really have evolved over a period of time to expand into more industries. We serve the pharma industry, the nutraceutical industry, the food industry, the chemical industry. And Scott will talk a little more later about what else we've expanded into. But over a period of time, what we realized was that a lot of our clients were experiencing a need for containment. So in 2008, we started a new group called Integrated Containment Systems with some gentlemen who had been in the containment industry for a long period of time. And I think that was probably how we also got involved with ChargePoint on the containment valves, because we really discovered that people were needing to, A, be more efficient with what they were doing, but also to really protect not only the operators, but the product itself. And the efficiency comes into, if you're spilling stuff all over the floor, A, somebody has to clean it up, and B, it's not usable product. So all of that containment came about, and we now build downflow booths and various hoods and isolators, including sterile and aseptic isolators. So that's kind of a brief history of how we got started and how we've evolved over a period of time.
Okay, very good. And what do you see as the latest sort of industry trends in processing equipment? Where do you see things going?
We really have seen a lot in the manufacturing changes, a high focus on CDMOs, contract manufacturing. They present their own different nuance for us with, for example, in the days when that wasn't that much of a player, and this would be, it was very common in our food business, there'd be contract manufacturers, but we didn't do so much with CDMOs for pharmaceutical, aseptic or really the oral solid dosage. We would have a specification we'd either write or our clients would write to develop what the system's going to be. And it was generally pretty narrowed for knowing up front the focus of what the product's going to be. Well, with CDMO, we see on these projects, we've got one big example of this that they don't know what their product's going to be. So the capabilities and the changeover and the broad capabilities expand exponentially, in my opinion, so that let's go to the aseptic side for a large sterile or aseptic fill finish system we did that they didn't know what their product was going to be because they didn't have the clients coming in yet. So this system had to deal with a 2 ml vial up to a 100 and then also be able to, they didn't know what type of glassware, if it's going to be tubular glass or molded glass to cover all this. So we ended up having, 14 different sets of change parts from the start, which was pretty much unheard of before that. You'd have one or two, or you would at least have possibilities to add more in the future. But you know, just the broad capabilities have to be much broader for that. In that respect, we see the trends with obviously the more post COVID is a definite movement to fill in for absence of workers. So there's a much higher level of automation. And a lot of the fill-in pieces for a dry material handling system, we make our modules. We've got a blender. We've got wash stations. We've got components in different rooms, modular, flexible system. But now you need something other than a worker to move a container between one room and the next because it's hard to find people now. That's a big trend. And really for higher potency in our containment world, it has been trending for a long time. And I just see that's going to continue to be more and more of an aspect for projects where we're getting, used to be down into past a 1 microgram OEL was a little rare. Now you're down into 100 nanograms, and I'm sure you've seen that too with yeah. Seeing the charge port range expand as far as its level of threshold, what the operator protection on it.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been interesting.
We've seen things going down to sort of picogram levels on some applications. That's whether that's 100% achievable at this point in time, but that is the aim. People are trying to aim for these really, really low levels.
Well, and it's been helpful for the FDA in the whole safety of the product and the people, the operators, to push for getting things into isolators and out of clean rooms. So that whole higher potency has, it's been trending for some time.
Yeah. Kind of to add on that, we've been going to the ISPE aseptic conference generally in Washington, D.C., like this last year. We just came back from that for last was 5 or 6 years. Of course, absence for 2021 for obvious reasons. But you'll see a lot of trends coming out of that, you know, and this is strictly for the aseptic world. It was previous conferences were a push towards, you know, or a focus on regulatory for challenging this 0.45 meters per second uninterrupted airflow, that doesn't work for a lot of filling and process being able to get around that. That's been revised and addressed with Annex 1. FDA side's a little bit slower to come around. Now we've seen through this, I guess my point was, that the FDA, with the best part of these conferences, I think, is the last session where you've got the FDA panel up on the stage. They're answering questions that have been posted electronically, and they answer them in order of hits, the more people asking the same question. That was the push then. But the thing that came out of it for me in the earlier conferences is FDA rarely states how to do something. They're not prescriptive. They're more justify what you're doing. They've came out and said that isolators is where they're encouraging people to go because of the less potential for product exposure and things. I'll probably butcher this analogy, but they said that when they come into a facility to inspect it, they will, they'll walk by the isolation suites to get to the open clean rooms, and other more open technologies, because that's where all the issues tend to be. That's about as a direct statement as the FDA ever comes out and say it.
Yeah.
In this last conference was really the first, well, it kind of touched the last year's, but this year's conference, there was a huge push of the FDA to get the operators out of the room. With the advent of gloveless isolators using all robotics, they had said that this is a focus of technology is coming up for this. Here's my takeaway from the conference, which is a little gross, but the what was her name? I forget her name now, but she was asked to repeat a stat that she made in an earlier presentation that illuminates the reason to get people out of the suites. Keep them away from the product is that said an average 200-pound person of their body weight for the content of bacteria is probably between 2 pounds and up to 6 pounds range of just your body mass is that much bacteria. So, you know, there's a lot of risk for particle shed and.
Yeah. Trying to control that is a challenge.
Yeah,
it is. It's
operators are the dirtiest thing in the room.
It always has been. I think the operators are the most contaminating sources. And you know, for me, I used to see it from the RAB systems. I see that sort of progressing through into now full on isolator technology. Do you see a similar sort of pattern? Is it pushing away from RABs into full isolators, or is there still a place for the RAB systems, high and low level RAB systems?
Yeah, the RAB systems, not exclusively, because we incorporate them with our isolators and a lot of systems, but they tend to be a really good fit for existing lines, retrofits. We do a lot of that work, but it's not always possible to retrofit a full isolator onto an existing piece of equipment. At that point, it's you may consider that it's the cost may override just going out and getting a new piece of equipment. There's variations. There's you can take it from it's not just isolators and RABs. There's closed RABs, open RABs, really looking at what the retrofit is and what's really possible for that.
Yeah.
And what do you see? The RABs are always the next solution from open clean room. That's the next stage. So,
yeah. And what do you see as some of the best practices when you're putting in a RAB system, an isolator, or a large material handling system that you guys offer?
With a RAB systems, one of the focuses on you need to, and often miss thing is, or not often miss, but the most intensive thing about it is dealing with writing SOPs. And a lot of this is on our client side with, when you open the door, what happens? Because at that point you've exposed the inside of the door, to the outside, the laminar flow, first pass airspace. So, you know, cleaned out, wiped down. It's better than just having an open clean room, but it's, you've got to deal with these practices. You also need to, an often missed thing is your clean first air, needs to be extended over the swing of the RABs of the door. It's one thing that gets missed very often is that they'll put the HEPA filtration or whatever just over the open part of the RABs and not consider the door space. Just a couple of things that come to mind.
Yeah. And I always felt as though the ergonomic side was always important for isolator technology. But I guess with, you know, just some of your comments there about the trends of moving the operators out, I guess that's going to sort of fade away as the automation improves on these gloveless systems.
Well, I think there's going to be a period of time before we get to the totally automated. And yes, having had an opportunity to work in the Glove Box Society for a while, the ergonomics are critical because you can have an operator that is 5'2" and an operator that is 6'2". And if they're trying to do the same process in that isolator, the short one needs a stool and also needs a way to reach whatever the process is inside that isolator. So we've always encouraged our clients to bring those people, and we typically build a mock-up so they can actually test with that, bring their process with them so they can reach and test and make sure that those processes can happen in that space.
And that forms very much part of the design. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was making a comment. It would be really easy for us if our clients all had hired from basketball teams, so we've got the longest reach isolators, but that's not reality.
And does this form a big part of the design? So you do the mock-up, and do you take all of the information from the mock-up, how far people can extend their arms, can they reach certain things? Does that then get molded back into the design as you take it forward to the design freeze?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. And we try to do that mock-up pretty early in the design process so that we can capture all of those needs.
Yeah, we still haven't seen where 3D CAD still can really, really capture fully the ergonomic, you know, we can take a good first pass of it, but it's still human creativity and mobility that we need to challenge that. And really is the client is so much responsible for the success of this to know as much as possible how they're going to do this process. And so we challenge that all the way through to make sure they can reach and reach and reach. We know some obvious things, but as they get into some of these more complex processes or maybe very flexible processes done in an isolator, that's what it's often difficult to simulate. It's easy to simulate with the reach, but not knowing what those are going to be can leave surprises at the end. So,
and what about you have stainless steel isolators and you have flexible isolators? How do you see the two sort of sitting together? You know, there's a lot of talk about disposable technology. Do they both have the place, or is one going to take over the other and the other become obsolete? Or how do you see that sort of panning out?
Yeah, I really think there's a place for both in the world and probably always will be. The small batches presently in gene and cell therapy, there's a definite slant and there's a case to be made for disposables because you've got one patient batches that, and that's the challenge of that industry is to, they've got the technology for all these wonderful developments, but trying to commercialize it for, trying to make one specific batch for one person's ailment is pretty expensive. You know, it's prohibitive in most, in a lot of cases. So with the single use, that's a perfect case for that. There's always going to be isolators. I may be proven wrong in the future, long after I'm gone, hopefully, that for the rigid walls as we do, that for high production, very high potent compounds and things, I think there's always going to be a case. There's the whole risk area. Do you really want to have a nanogram OEL in a bag that can tear, versus a glove box that has precautions against any ruptures or breaches.
Yeah. And do you have any predictions about what some of these changes? We talked about some of the trends. How some of these trends, how they're going to affect the pharma and the biopharma industry in years to come?
Yeah, I kind of go back to the another aspect of the gloveless isolators, gloveless machines that are fully robotics, they're currently limited to, maybe off here, but maybe that 20 to 50 vials per minute range, are pretty low speed equipment. I think there's going to be a barrier going up to, you know, modern, you know, full production lines that are, you know, 200, 400, 600 vials per minute that the gloveless isolators can only achieve by repeating cells and having, you know, 10 cells versus one isolated line with gloves. So I think there's always going to be that barrier between the two is the risk reward and also the expense of going fully robotic is always going to keep the glove isolator in practice.
And that's inside the isolator. You've mentioned the robotics there. Do you see anything outside of the isolator? I see more and more of these automated sort of facilities being talked about where the robotics are doing some of the material handling as well. Do you see that being an impact in the future?
Yeah, it's surprising. Back when I first got into the material handling industry and when I got a little more on the pharmaceutical side, and that pharmaceutical has been my slant in that industry for quite some time. I'm a little broader now. But I remember my first project down in Puerto Rico was, I forget what the drug, but it was wasn't Motrin. The name will escape me. But at that time, it was very common to have automatic guided vehicles, AGVs, for moving our containers around the plant from one station to the next just because of the high volume of the products. This was back in the early 90s, get to about the end of the 90s, and that practice really almost disappeared for pharmaceutical. It all went back to, and I think it's because a lot of the drugs went from blockbuster, huge volume drugs, and it got more smaller scale. The facilities changed from dedicated, which that robotic system I talked about was a dedicated facility, down to very flexible multi-product facilities where they may still be high volumes, but they'll alternate product consistently just to reduce the amount of runtime on one particular drug.
We are seeing, Christian, in our own facility, exploring all kinds of automation to speed up what we do in terms of fabricating equipment, from better engineering practices to faster welding, automated welding, and how we can essentially do more with fewer people, because we just aren't making enough people these days. We play the great game of business, and Jack Stack, who started that company 30 some years ago, has been harping about this for probably the last 20, is that we're not looking at the numbers, and that we're all needing to look at how we can be more efficient with our processes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, well, efficiencies and speed, you know, when you come to delivering projects as well, you know, how quickly you can turn those around, those efficiencies need to work both in your production and then obviously the end product needs to be an efficient product for the client as well. Definitely.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you see any of the technologies that we're concentrating on, containment and aseptic processing, branching out to any other industries, maybe the battery industry or something similar?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's I'm glad you touch on that, because that's been this is an exciting time in our life. In our business, material handling, the additive manufacturing for the 3D printing and metals, we're doing projects for powder titanium, aluminum, stainless steel handling that's really changed, it expanded the focus of what our business is with, containerized, relatively smaller lot handling for the additive. For us, it kind of goes hand in hand with the battery, quite different industries, but is a lot of the technology is the same. The movement for electric vehicles and everything is going based on lithium, lithium ion. So we have a lot of projects taking off and pursuing more for handling that type of material that has, and some of them are pretty nasty customers with the containment levels need to be for some of the products we're handling.
Well, they not only are probably potent and potentially fire hazard, but they're also very expensive. So the containment part, again, plays into what's needed for the system.
Yeah. They're looking at sort of sealed transfers around the process. Is that where it's aiming to go?
Yeah, it's all about the docking. It's we can, and that's where we've worked many projects with ChargePoint, where we need to dock our IBC or our portable container from the dispensing area where we bring the products out. From the shipping containers or the active containers into our large container, we have to dock there, and the docking points are where the exposure risk comes in. It's not so much the isolator or the process equipment from getting to one stage to the next, and that's the same with pharmaceutical. It is with additive battery technology. But those newer industries, I'll mention magnetics too for car motors. That's kind of related to the battery industry. But with these come with pyrofluoric materials that ignite when exposed to oxygen. They're also very challenging. The powder metals are pretty abrasive. So we've got things we're using pharmaceutical technology for the containment and the protection of the operator or the product, but we're having to add additional factors so that it doesn't wear product contact points. And going with metal, metal seat valves, things that we never even dreamed about in pharmaceutical that we have to take into account for these other new industries. But it's good stuff though.
Yeah. Well, because several years ago, as a company, we're looking at, are we going to be relatable 10, 15 years from now? Because we're looking at oral solid dosage and that demand going down. Well, the nutraceuticals continues to go up. So that market looks safe. But being able to apply this same technology to new industries is, just gives us new life. It's exciting to be able to apply those same technologies to new industries.
And if there's a definite requirement for it there, and you guys have an expertise in that already, it's a good place to be able to leverage that technology and that knowledge straight into another industry that's crying out for it, really.
It's just fun for me that funner projects always seem to be ones that you are a consumer of the end of this. So, we go out, for years, we go out and I buy a bottle of Motrin. Hey, that was made in our equipment. We go to we go to Walmart and buy our snacks. And we're buying Pepperidge Farms fish crackers. Well, that's made in our equipment. Now, my wife's car, a RAV4 plug-in hybrid, the battery technology was probably touched on our equipment at some point. It's just really cool to see the end products that were a little bit like BASF. They always advertise the brand you never heard of, because we're the technology that gets to the product, but not the end product. We're a lot like that.
So it goes full circle then, from where you've helped in the production and you're also the consumer at the end.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's always fun to share that with our, people who are actually building the equipment, because, when they step in here on the first day, they have no idea.
Well, the guy that built our isolator for a NASA project that was going on, what they call it, the HDU. It was a it didn't set foot on the moon, but it was a prototype to demonstrate the habitat development. Oh, I forget
and,
that.
And a testing facility.
Yeah. So, but he just beams. And that's going to be a life story for him as he built a NASA isolator.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. And do you have any sort of final thoughts? We've discussed quite varied things: containment, sterile processing, the battery industry, future of where things are going, and some interesting trends there. But do you have any final thoughts from Custom Powders or just personally from yourselves?
Oh, the just a random thought with this is very specific, that things that was very often missed with our powder handling side of things, that there is very common things that are missed in a system design that need to be thought of up front. One thing as far as I think the two biggest is product segregation. With you've got a blended direct blend product, and it's not just for pharmaceutical, but it's going to be for, we've done work for food, chemical, anything that has multiple ingredients that is handled. the last thing that seems to be thought about is how do you maintain that consistency so that throughout your handling process, so when you get down, if you're making a tablet, that tablet has the prescribed amount of active in it, and that active doesn't get carried and left in a lump somewhere. So you get one hot tablet, and the rest are duds. I'm being an extremist here, but you really need to have care on the handling of that blended product as you go down things, so you don't have tall drops from dropping two stories that can segregate. Don't have extreme handling, so the vibration is gonna segregate the product. There's a lot of things you can do up front, which is really hard to do later to correct these problems. To think about one of the other things too is as part of this is just venting the process, so you don't. Your powder can flow freely from one level to the next, and it's not gonna have air carried back up through the product. Making closed transfers, not open transfers, and the closed transfers don't have to be expensive. It can be a compression seal. You get into containment, then you want a nice charge point valve system in there as a transfer for those. But think about those things when you're designing a system that so you don't have to go back and correct them later.
So I'll just add to that, Christian, because the thing that has just amazed me over the period of time, because I didn't come from this industry, is our capability of helping people with those questions of, what's the ultimate product. What are the issues with any materials that you're using, with the handling of it, with the ergonomics, all of those things, to be able to explore those as we're putting a project together. And we're very good at that. And to me, that's the being curious part and asking all the questions you can think of up front just helps the process go smoother for all of us.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. Some really, really interesting insights. And I'm sure the listeners will have enjoyed that. Where can we go to find out a little bit more about Custom Powders?
So our website is custom-powder.com, where you can find all of the information on our products and also the Art of Engineering podcast.
Thank you very much.
And if you're traveling, we are centrally located in the middle of the United States, Springfield, Missouri. Highway I-44 goes right through here. So if you're going from Chicago to California, you'll come right by our business.
If I'm going past, I will drop in for sure.
Please.